who took the very first fiddle class. His name is Kevin Wimmer. So if Kevin can come up. Somebody was talking earlier about, I'm going to bash Kevin a little bit, but I just love Kevin. I want to bash Kevin. Yeah, he came back from Augusta, and then every festival he'd go to, you know, sure enough, Kevin would be over there playing second fiddle with my dad. He happened to show up at all these festivals, and one day, my dad was driving a school bus. My dad was a school bus driver, and this is this place where you're coming off the Highway 97, which is coming from Tipitate, Big Tipitate, going into Big Basile. And he's going to make the left turn there, and then who's coming on 190 but Kevin and his California? I mean, you tell the story.
Well, he had invited me down a couple times, you know, and I was just sort of driving around the country, and I don't know, I think I was in, ended up in Wisconsin or something, and I said, looked at a map, and, oh, it's just straight down. So, you know, I had a map. It had Basile on it, and I just figure I'll go to Basile and ask around. They must know where, you know, how to find Dewey or something.
And wasn't so, Tracy there?
Yeah, I was just, so I drove in. I hadn't called or nothing. I was being just kind of on the loose. But sure enough, as I pull into see the Basile city limit sign on my right, and there's Dewey with the bus, waiting to turn in, and he looks at me, and I look at him, and I pull over. He was on the way to school to pick up the kids, and he pulls over, and he didn't seem that surprised. he'd seen my little rust-colored Toyota show up at enough festivals that he said, "I thought that was your car." But he told me how to get to his house and said Tracy was over there and he had to go pick up the kids and be back after a little while. So I went over there and found Tracy.
What was it like in that first fiddle class? I mean, like, what kind of schedule did Augusta have back then?
Well, it was just like, I don't know, a dozen or so. We had a dozen, but there were a few extras that kind of hung around. And we just met, there was this one class, we met like, well, officially like 9 to 12 and 1 to 4 every day. You know, one instructor, one class. Now, but we'd do the morning and the afternoon, and then after dinner we'd meet at that corner of Hallihurst. I don't think they'd finish the porch, you couldn't go all the way around then. But that front corner, the whole class would just go over there and we'd jam, and a couple people in the class who were taking fiddle maybe had an accordion or a guitar, and so we would try and fill out the band. Oh, I forgot one more thing. Not only did we do those two classes, but Dewey had to play the mini class, the music for the mini class after dinner. So they had
that?
Him working hard.
Having Dewey Balfa playing for the dance classes, it was great.
And there was no, you know, and actually he played accordion some because there was no accordion player, and so he, after a while, he would play someone else's accordion and get one of us to play fiddle or something. But at the end of the week, I think maybe Thursday or so, Steve Riley and Rick Michaud showed up to play the concert and the festival. But they weren't there the whole week. They just showed up at the end. And that was Steve's first time out of Louisiana. He was like, I don't know, in high school or something.
He was a senior in high
school. You know, and so, you know, I don't know. That was a class.
That's pretty good. So we've come a long way. From one person doing all the jobs to having the magnificent staff that we have now. So, Christine, why don't you pull up the rest of your band? Get them up.
Okay, I'd like to get Dirk Powell up here. And, no, Chocula, I mean Chalk. Well, I'll just tell you a little bit about our group, I guess. I don't know how many of you knew my dad. Seems like there's a lot of familiar faces in here, but some of you might be your first time out here. And,
how did you meet Dirk?
That's a much better. Actually, I met Dirk at a camp similar to this about 4 years ago.
Actually, that's not true.
That's not true. You're right.
We're having all kinds of discrepancies up here. But we met, actually, well, I might as well go ahead and tell this story. I saw Christine with Dewey in 85 at the National, well, it's not the National Folk Festival, whatever it is that
it's
they
the
have
American,
on the mall.
Yeah, the American Folk Life.
Yeah, in Washington.
Smithsonian
in D.C. And I saw her and Dewey up there, and probably Tracy was there. I know Peter was there. I was really jealous of Peter. I saw him up on that stage with Christine.
I was there too. Didn't you see me?
You were there? I didn't see you. We were all there. We didn't know each other at all yet. I didn't know Christine, but I just got a big crush on her. I didn't see her again for, I think, 6 years or something. But then we met for real the first time. I went down for Mardi Gras 1 year, and we met down there at Mulot's. Christine was dressed. She was dressed as I don't know what. She had a
seersucker
suit and a mustache and a little twirly bird hat. I still found her to be very attractive. But I must say, when I saw her the next day, when she was not in costume, I was all the more impressed. Anyway, I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Well, I wanted to give a little history about the group, but that was good to get me laughing. And my father passed away 4 years ago, and when that happened, well, shoot, I'm gonna cry. But there was just a lot of pain, and I wasn't really sure what to do with that pain. And I, thank God, I was together with Dirk, and Dirk and I were traveling around, and we began writing songs together. And when we got back home, my sister Nelda, who I miss a lot of when she was here, but it's funny, she had never written any songs either, but the same thing was happening to her during the summer that my dad passed away, and we just weren't sure what to do with ourselves, but that was a way of expressing our feelings. So anyway, we got back from the summer, and Dirk and Nelda and I got together, and we're just so excited with all these songs that we had. And after we played all our songs for each other, we had like 9 songs that we had written over the summer between the three of us. And then actually that night we wrote, that's okay. That night we wrote another song, which is on a CD that Horace and Stacy like a lot, Tusep Atina. We just wrote it right there. And so anyway, we were just really excited about that and wasn't sure what to do. And so we just made a little tape just to hear it. And we sent it off to Floyd Swallow, which is the local guy there, and just to see what he thought, with not really any intention of maybe actually making a recording, but he was really excited about it, so he said, I'd like to make a recording. So we said, oh, wow, we gotta find a fiddle player. And so who came to mind immediately was Kevin, because we had spent a lot of time with him over the summer, and I'm gonna tell you a little something that this guy back home, one of the folklorists back home, he said, well, you know, that's good, Christine, that, you know, you and Nelda want to make a band and, you know, have Dirk with you, but why don't you get a fiddle player from home, you know, because he wanted to keep that thing. And I said, well, you know, there's not very many people, whenever I hear Kevin play, it's like I hear my daddy play, and he plays with that same feeling, so it was very important. I don't care where anybody's from. It's how they play, what they put into their music. So we got Kevin to play with us. And I cry easily, but I'm just tired. So I'm sorry. I'm making everybody cry. It was really a wonderful thing happening here. And so anyway, we made our recording, and then we started getting, you know, the access to play Festival Acadien, and just, whenever we did that, we had no intentions of actually becoming a group, but it just was a natural progression, and we started playing for dances, and the only drummer that I could ever think of that I wanted to play with was Chop Chapman right there. And, because it's hard to find, most of you probably know that the kind of music that we play is not real fancy, not a lot of stuff, but it's just really on the groove of it, and it's hard to find a drummer that's solid like that, but doesn't want to throw everything, all kind of stuff in, and Chop just has that where he's right in the pocket. And so anyway, we started, and that was, I guess, almost be 2 years in the fall. And anyway, Chop, I have to, you have to tell him the first time you, you know that story about,
Everybody asked me how I really got involved in Cajun music, and it's a true story. It's a great story, and every time I think about it, I thank God that I went through this experience. But as a young guy, I played rock and roll music, and I listened to Cajun all my life, but I really never, you know, wanted to play Cajun music. And when I got back from serving Army time, a friend of mine came up to me and said, look, we're having a Christmas party this Saturday night, and I want you to play Cajun drums with this Cajun band. I said, well, I don't play Cajun music. He says, yeah, well, yeah, I know you don't, but I've seen you play with your hands. I bet you can do it. So I said, well, who am I playing with? And he said, some old Cajun country band. Don't worry, they're about on the same level as you. So I really felt good at that point, you know. And so I get to the party, I'm setting my drums up and everything, and all of a sudden I hear some talk behind me at the door, and I recognize the voices. And they were the Balfa Brothers. You know, like, I would go see the Balfa Brothers every weekend in Basile. They were, like, the best. And I hear them talking back at the door, and I said to myself, they're not here to dance. They're not here to dance. And sure enough, you know, I looked at the guy who invited me to the party, and I said, I'm going to kill you. And he said, don't worry about it. You'll do all right. Well, yeah, right. So the dance is going on, and, you know, being a rock and roll drummer, I was throwing a lot of stuff in there, you know, and Mr. Dewey, I mean, I loved him greatly. He was a great, great guy, but he was a perfectionist, and he would let you know, you know. Christine kind of had that look every once in a while. But he'll be playing, you know, and I'll be rock and rolling, and he would look at me like that, and he would go, say, pow, rock and roll. And man, it would be like a knife stabbing me in the heart, you know. You know, Dewey Balfa was telling me I'm playing lousy, I'm playing rock and roll with him. And Rodney, his younger brother, would look at me and he would be playing a guitar and he'd say, don't worry about it, you're going to be all right. You know, at the end of the dance, I felt so glad to be finished. The stress was gone. But anyway, it paid off because a year or so before Mr. Dewey passed away, I was fortunate enough to play. When I was playing with the Mamou Playboys, our fiddle player couldn't make it for two nights straight, and Mr. Dewey played with us at Mulots and Bro Bridge in Baton Rouge. And the last night, just like the fatherly person he was, he just walked right up to me and put his arm around me and said, you know, Chop, I never thought you'd be able to do it, but Rodney always told me you would. So it was a great feeling, and from that point on, I knew I had done right. Thank you.
Should we play some music? Yeah? Okay, we'll play some of the songs we wrote, maybe. I still really love to play triangle, and the first time I actually played triangle on stage was, I think it was the same year that Dirk may have seen me, and I played triangle at home with my dad. You know, we'd always have, you know, Kevin told the story about him coming down and, you know, Mr. Tracy being there. There was always, you know, before my uncles had passed away, we'd always have, you know, them over or, you know, local musicians over, and it was always music in our house, and it still continued after, you know, Uncle Rodney and Uncle Will passed on, and we'd have, you know, Mr. Tracy was there all the time, about half of the year, and Kevin came down, and Charlie and Lynn came down. I remember when I was a little girl, and but we'd always have, you know, music in our house, and so we, you know, we'd pick up the spoons or play triangle. But the first time I ever played was on stage was at that festival. It was just, you know, a major festival in the DC Mall, you know, no pressure or anything. And my dad said, you can do it. But he never actually, you know, worked with me until the night before we were going to go play on stage. So we were down in this, I don't know, it was a place where it was like the basement. Yeah, it was like the party room the night before. And so he said, well, let's, you know, just play some with fiddle and triangle. So I do, you know, I started playing, he goes, you got it all backwards. I was emphasizing like the opposite of what it was supposed to be, and I thought, oh God, you know. And so finally we worked on it, and then I got it right. And like, but you know, he was a perfectionist, and if you didn't have it right, you could give that look or stomp that foot, or and then you know you had to get on track. But I played triangle. I was, how old was I? Now that must have been a different time. I was 12 years old the first time. But anyway, I played triangle for a long time with him, and I guess I started playing guitar about five years ago. And I had my first fiddle lesson when I was 8 years old. Gina McCleary, I don't know if you know her, but she gave me my first fiddle lesson, and I'm still working on the song she taught me. I'm gonna admit that I'm not somebody that likes to practice a whole lot, so I end up playing things that just kind of, you can kind of pick up and play, and came real natural to me. And I admire all of you that play fiddle and accordion, because you have to do a lot of work. But I think you got your answer. What y'all wanna do? Any requests? Okay, we can. Fleur du printemps. Okay. All right, we'll do. We can do the Mardi Gras song in a little bit. You want to do two sapatinas, one of the ones we wrote? Okay. Let me tell you, the story. Two sapatina is about. It says. She has blonde hair and blue eyes, just like her grandmother. But when it comes to Saturday night, she drinks just like her grandfather. And so my sister Nelda usually sings that part. And then I come back and respond. And I say, they tell me that I have ugly ways. They tell me that I have ugly ways, but where do you think I learned them? I wasn't adopted. It runs in my family. So two step fatina. I'm gonna do Nelda's part since she's.
Les yeux bleus, les cheveux blancs, ne sont pareils qu'on peut pas. Mais quand ça vient, samedi soir, savoir pareil qu'on peut pas. Pareil qu'on peut pas. Mais ça dit que j'ai des vilaines moyens. Mais tu croches les appris. J'ai pas été adopté. Ça court dans la famille. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to do another one that Christine and I wrote. It's one we did in the concert last night called Les Fleurs du Printemps.
Yeah, all our CDs and cassettes all have both the French lyrics and translation because we feel it's important for people to understand the lyrics even if they don't speak French. And, I sure appreciate it on some of those Balfour Brothers records when they had the lyrics on the back, that second one. Yeah, let's get into Cajun music. It was great. But, so.
I just want to plug my little vocal class tomorrow. During that class, we're going to be learning that song as well as some other new songs that are on our new CD. So if you're interested in any of that, I'll be doing the vocal class at 4 tomorrow. And we had a request to do the Mardi Gras song, and those of you, there's quite a few in here, I think, have had the chance to go down to Louisiana for Mardi Gras. And whenever we say the Mardi Gras that we're talking about is not the New Orleans Mardi Gras. You go southwest, go west of there, and it's a whole different Mardi Gras that most of the world don't know about, and it's the country Mardi Gras. And this song, and whenever you hear it, it's a real ancient sounding, has like this minor key, and or minor chords, I don't know what key it's actually in, but anyway, it's you hear this song like, you know, leading up to Mardi Gras, you hear it over and over, and it just gets you excited, and you get this fire, and then like Mardi Gras Day, you know, whenever if we play, you play it, like you play like three or four songs, and you play the Mardi Gras song, you play three or four songs, you play the Mardi Gras song, and people just get fired up, and it's incredible. But then after Mardi Gras is over, you don't want to hear it for for months.
So yeah, we're getting ready for Mardi Gras 96.
Yeah.
Starting to get psyched up now, so.
Once you experience the Mardi Gras down there, this song will forever be different for you. Because the tonality is so unique in the music, it brings you back every time.
fiddles?
Does anybody have any questions? I mostly just translate it to French.
Some of that. I was wondering if anybody was curious about the whole thing of writing songs and how that happens, and, you know, where does that come, where does the song come from? You know, there isn't one, and all of a sudden there is one. I mean, what happens? So, yeah, fortunately, me and Christine as a team, we work together on that, and she, you know, have ideas together. I have some ideas in English and some in French, and she has some, same way, we just kind of get it together gradually. But a lot of the ideas for a lot of the songs that we do come from things that just happen. You know, you see something and it strikes you. And one of the songs that we wrote, which is called Les Vieux Hommes, the old men's old man two-step, sort of came from, you know, I was somewhere down there and I saw somebody, this old guy dancing with a bottle on his head. And he was just dancing around, you know, smooth as you could be, with a bottle balanced on his head. And you may say, well, why would somebody do that, you know? Why do that? But then you realize, well, why not do that, you know? That's great. That's what it's all about, just because there it is to do, you know? So that kind of thing, it just kind of triggers something in you. That's kind of, and then you get maybe, like with that song, well, then there's one idea. So then let's get some other ideas built on that. That song has a verse about, another verse is about, I saw some old men playing cards, and some of them won, some of them lost, but their own company is never too expensive. You know, they don't care who wins or loses. That's not the point. And then the last verse in that one is, so an old man playing the fiddle, his body was old, but his spirit was young. Just stuff like that. You know, once you get that first idea, me and Christina are writing a song right now that I'm excited about. We haven't worked on it for a little while since we've been traveling here, but when we saw Christine's cousin, Warner, the other day, and he was saying he was working offshore, so he was gone for 7 days at a time. And as he was leaving, his kids said, please, we don't want you to go. Please don't go. Please don't go. And he said, I have to go. I have to make money. I have to provide for you. And they said, we don't want any of that. We just want you. You know, and that kind of thing, it just hit me like, whoa. So there's a song that's so powerful. You know, here this man is feeling like, well, I have to give my kids what they need. I have to go work and provide for them. And all they're saying is, please don't go. We want you to, you know. That kind of stuff just hits you, and like that's the way the songs get sparked. You know, something happens, and then you go from there. So, the actual melodies. I don't know about that. The melodies just come from, you know, sometimes people write songs, and maybe you'll hear, you know, like maybe you'll hear a song, and maybe you'll just think, well, you could change it a little bit. Maybe you'll hear a little variation on it. You'll do it that way. Most of the time, for me, writing the melodies just comes from just, you pick up your instrument and you don't play a tune, you just start messing around. See what comes out. If something comes out that you remember that, you know, that feels right, it feels unique, it doesn't, a lot of times people write songs and then they go and they find out that it was another song, you know, that they just absorbed it somewhere and then they go, uh-oh, this is already a song. That happens all the time because you just, you know, if the music is in you, it's just rolling around up there, and sometimes it comes out with a new melody.
When you're thinking of the melody, do you think of it on a fiddle or on accordion?
Different things. There's one song that we wrote recently that we haven't recorded yet, I wrote on the fiddle. But I actually just wrote the melody riding around in the van, just thinking about it, because I had the idea while I was driving around, so I started thinking about it then. Well, yeah, in the sense that we haven't actually collaborated on songs, but, you know, of course, when you write a new song, there's no fiddle part. If I play it on the accordion, there's no fiddle part. So Kevin creates the fiddle parts from, you know, part of it's just based on the melody, but also there's, you know, you hear him play some of those fiddle parts, and they sound like they could be, you know, real ancient traditional tunes and stuff, and, you know, he's creating, he has to start from scratch there, too, you know, from a rough outline of, you know, what he could do with it. So, and of course Chop is adding the groove that, you know, that totally changes the character of a song. Once we all play it together, it becomes a different thing.
Has Kevin or the drummer written songs, or are they playing? rolling around up here.
Well, I have ideas and plans, but I haven't quite been able to get them out yet. So.
A difficult thing.
One of these days they're going to come and...
Look out.
Come all
going to come open up the floodgate.
I'm trying to find the key.
French at home, and is it hard to produce songs in French, and mostly here in an English-speaking world?
Well, we try to speak French as much as possible, and that's still not enough, nearly. It's not nearly enough. We wish we spoke nothing but French. We would aspire to that because it's so important, such a huge part of the music, and it's a part that's fading away quickly, and it's a scary, you know, thing that might happen, you know, in 20, 30 years. There really, I mean, it could be people, there could be nobody speaking French, but everybody singing in French, and that just gets to be kind of... You have a lot of younger people that are not really aspiring to learn the language. I mean, they do want to sing in French, they memorize some songs, but you have to speak it to be able to feel it. And so we really try to do that. But, you know, I try to write songs in French, and then Christine, you know, always corrects me, and then I always get all bent out of shape and take it personally and get, you know, upset and angry and think I had it right the first time, even though I know I didn't, and then I relax about it. And that's usually the way that works.
About the question about talking French. We try to talk French as much as we can with each other when we're on the road and such like that, but really don't get to talk it enough. But another reason we want to talk is because, for instance, when we were in Port Townsend, Boissec and Canary Fontenot were there, so when they come meet us, we want to speak French with them. We want to keep that, you know, that communication going with the older musicians and maybe pass it on to the younger musicians, where you need to start talking French because it's so very vital in the music and the language.
But I think Chop grew up having French being spoken in the house, and as a child I grew up having it spoken in the house, but I didn't realize that I could actually speak until I was put in a situation where nobody else, I was 8 years old and I was put in a situation where nobody else spoke English, so I had to speak French. But it's amazing how Dirk and Kevin are, they really want to learn, and they've been picking up, you know, French, and we say, like, you know, sometimes when they're okay today, just French, and we speak just French for most of the day. It kind of, but I really think it's important. The main thing for Dirk and I, because we want to someday have children, and I want to be able to teach my children French, and I don't want their, you know, and it's very important to both of us. So it's just an important part of the thing. And I hate to see, like what Dirk said, if everybody, because there's not very many people our age. Horace grew up speaking French, I mean, with French in his home, but he never really spoke French, but he understood it. But he's been learning to speak French as well, and he's really picking it up, and I think he realizes how important it is. Because if you have a bunch of people singing in a language that nobody understands, it would be, it's ridiculous. Yeah, let's play.
Let's play something. Can you play it on a moment?
Sure.
Yeah. I'll play your song.
Yeah, I'm going to play that too.
Let's play.
Okay, maybe we'll get to Grand Maman move, but for now, just while we're on the subject of writing songs, I'm going to do one that I wrote, that Christine helped me with. This is the one I wrote riding in the van. I remember I was driving around Lake Martin. Some of you have been around Lake Martin. Mm-hmm. I was driving around and thinking of this song. It's kind of based on something that happened to my grandfather, in some ways, which is a lot of times you'll meet older musicians who gave it up. A lot of times you meet people who gave it up when they were mid-20s or something. They get married, they start having a family, they think that the music doesn't go with that life. My grandfather was playing music when he was young, and for him, like, music and fighting and drinking and this whole life were one thing. Unfortunately, he couldn't separate the music from that, and when he got married, he had to gain responsibility, and he had to give that up, so he gave up music too. And as an older man, he looked back and just regretted that, you know, had basically given up the main love of his life more than anything else because he thought he had to. And so this is kind of a song I wrote about that called La Musique de Ma Jeunesse, which means the music of my youth. And the words, I'll just go ahead and translate it for you. The words are... When I was young, I played the beautiful music. It was my happiness, the reason for living. And when I got married, my wife gave me one choice. Either give up your music or your love for me. And then the next verse says, I gave up my songs when I became a man. I abandoned music for the pleasure of my wife. Now I'm an old man and my heart is full of regret. Let me return to the music of my youth. And the last verse says, now my life is almost over. My hands can almost no longer play. My voice is so weak, I don't know if I can sing. But it was my first love, and the music was my first love, and now it's my last wish that I can return to that one more time. So, la musique de ma jeunesse.
J'ai joué la bonne musique, c'était mon agrément, la raison pour ma vie. Et quand je me mariais, ma femme m'a donné un seul choix, abandonner ta musique et ton amour pour moi. J'ai quitté mes chansons quand j'ai vu un homme. J'ai laissé ça j'aimais pour le plaisir de ma femme. Astèrement je suis vieux et mon cœur est plein de gré. Laisse-moi l'entonner à la musique de ma jeunesse. Ma vie est proche finie et mes mains plus proches pas jouer. Ma voix est si faible, je connais pas si je peux chanter. C'était ma première amour, la musique que j'aimais. C'est ma dernière espoir. Ça, je vais retourner.